It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Davante Adams obviously would like to be in New Orleans, would like to be in New York with the Jets. There have been discussions, but I think the events in New York and the events in New Orleans may have slowed down talks with those two teams, and we'll see if and when they can pick up some steam, because everybody does expect that Davante Adams is going to be traded. We just don't know where or when, but right now the Jets are going through a head coaching change. New Orleans has an injured quarterback, and we'll see how that impacts Davante Adams going forward.
Jeremy and Joe, ahead of Bills-Jets, Monday Night Football coming up. You're going to this game.
I am going to this game.
You are going to this game.
My first time in that stadium.
I've not been to the new stadium. I went to the Meadowlands to see a Jets game. Jets-Colts.
Jets-Colts.
Yeah, I was in college. Okay. Someone came across free tickets and drove down to New York, watched Jets and Colts on a Sunday night.
So I'm going to go to Jets-Colts.
Yeah. Pretty much.
What happened in Jets-Colts?
The Jets won.
Okay. Do you remember either of the quarterbacks?
I think Peyton Manning, Colts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Early Peyton Manning?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably...
And then what, like Vinny Testaverde, maybe?
I think the Jets won. It's Jets-Colts. I'm going to say it's the year 2000.
Okay.
Week 14.
The Meadowlands, I'm going to show my age here. The Meadowlands was right where the new stadium is, right? Basically?
Yes.
It was Jersey?
Yes.
Okay. Somewhere in Jersey. So I'm excited to see that stadium for the first time. Not that it's like, maybe it's one of the nicer stadiums, I think, in the league. It's not like one of the historic ones. It's not Lambeau. It's
no.
Not Soldier Field or something like that, even Arrowhead.
Yeah, Jets 27-17, December 3rd, 2000. I was at that game.
Okay.
24 years ago, I saw the Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's before I came here to Buffalo. And I lived in Syracuse area. I went to Syracuse. I was a Giants fan. I never made it to a Giants game.
Yeah.
And had the ability to go to a Jets game with tickets randomly and went to that game. And, you know, the rest is history. Now I'm here and lived here for a long time and I'm a Bills fan.
This felt like the year to do the New York trip. Because when we looked at road games that we could go to this year, like Houston, all right. Miami's always a potential, but I would rather do Miami in a year where it wasn't in September.
Right, just like a December Miami trip.
A December Miami trip. Detroit, L.A. again, right? Like, we didn't do the L.A. trip the last couple of years, but it's like L.A. again, Indianapolis. I think we flirted with the idea of like a Notre Dame, Indianapolis
trip.
Notre
Dame plays Florida State that week.
Yeah, but winning, because it was also October 14th, right in the heart of fall, yeah, the winner was let's play Bethpage Black and then go to Bills Jets. So that's exactly what we're doing.
Very cool.
This weekend. We also might go to Yankees Royals if that gets to a fifth game, but
look at you.
I've never been to a major league, well, I don't know. You tell me. Can I say I've been to a major league baseball game? The only major league baseball game I've ever been to was Blue Jays Astros at Salem Field here in Buffalo.
I mean, you've been to a major league baseball game.
I haven't been to a major league ballpark though.
Yeah. Okay.
So that would be a first for me, too, gets to it on Saturday.
To go to a Major League Baseball game and a postseason game in New York would be wild. I mean, that's nice. I've got...
Without any rooting interest, though, because I don't really like the Yankees, I'm not going to be like outwardly like hissing and jeering them.
Yeah, no.
Oh, I got to root for Kansas City?
No,
Kansas City is enough stuff right now.
No, you're going to root for the... You go to that game, you're going to root for the Yankees. Period.
Oh,
you're going to root for the Yankees. You're going to go.
I don't know how I feel about that, though.
You have to.
Why?
Because
why?
You don't go to a show and hope that the Stars do bad. You're going into their house. If you're neutral, if you're neutral, you go in there and you support the home team.
I don't know if I'm neutral though. I think if I ever have had one rooting interest in baseball, it's I'm rooting for whoever's playing the Yankees.
Then don't go to the game. Let somebody else that wants to root for them go to that game.
I could root for the Royals.
No.
No?
No.
That's a bad idea?
Yes, it's a terrible idea.
Why?
Because you have the opportunity.
It'd be like you going to watch Duke play, I don't know, Purdue and rooting for Purdue.
Is it at Cameron Indoor?
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Duke.
No, come on.
Without question.
Did I pick the right team, by the way? Who would be your arch nemesis?
Doesn't even matter.
For Syracuse.
I mean, put it this way.
Duke.
My arch nemesis, UConn.
All right, so you're going to UConn to watch a game and they're playing Fresno State.
Okay, I wouldn't go. That's it. If I can't root for the team for a day,
you just wouldn't go.
I wouldn't go. That's it.
See, I don't have a problem going. I don't think I would do this because it's Kansas City, and I don't feel great about rooting for
Kansas
City.
If you're going to go experience the scene. To me, this is like...
I will stand up if there's like if there's a Judge home run. I'll get up, but I'm not like... You know, I will. I guess.
You will stand up, and
I'm not going to cheer though.
You will high five someone next to you.
See, that's what I was just getting to.
And you will high five a stranger.
That's where I just stopped myself.
And
if
that
somebody turns around to high five me,
right.
I don't think I'll have it in me to leave him hanging.
Isn't that a top five feeling at any sporting event? Just high fiving a stranger, just because you're all celebrating the same thing.
I'm glad this came up. We'll get back to the Bills and Jets in a minute. Larry, hang on, and anyone else wants to jump on the phones. So last night. Imagine for a moment you are at that Padres game when Tatis blasts that ball to the moon. And you're like, well, I'm not really here rooting for the Padres. Please. Absolutely. Get out of here. Please.
The Padres are not the Yankees.
It doesn't matter. I don't care about the Padres. If I was there, I would have taken my shirt off on that home run. He stands at the plate for a minute and a half and then flips the bat. It was an epic bat flip. Almost Batista level, not quite Jose Batista level, who had the greatest bat flip of all time. But that Tatis moment, like, watch. There are a few things in sports that are a cooler single shot than the dugout shot of a dude that smashes a home run, and you see all three levels of the grandstand, everybody stand up, arms up as it's on the way out. That's the coolest shot in sports. Watch that Tatis highlight. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you're going to the Yankee game, you're rooting for the Yankees. You have to.
I don't know.
All right.
I might get swept into it. It's going to feel dirty. It's going to feel dirty.
It's going to feel great is what it's going to feel. I went to a Tigers playoff game. Tigers and Rangers, I think. I don't even remember. A long time ago. I walked into Detroit. Hey, ticket to a baseball game are $40. Drive to Detroit. Go there. And I'm the diehard Tigers fan of your life for 3.5 hours.
Yeah. For a day. Tigers fan for a day.
Try it on for a day.
Yeah.
It's not so bad. It's a good life. How different is it than...
But this is the Tigers. Like, I don't like these comparisons because the Yankees to me are like, that's the Death Star. That is the...
Yeah.
That is, they are the big bad...
Since when?
You know.
What have they ever done to you, your life? The Yankees ruined a decade for me. What have they done for you?
I mean, every college football broadcast for an entire year because I had to watch Aaron Judge's AL home run chase.
All right, fair enough. But that's the worst they've done
to you. I don't know. They're always annoying. They're always in my face. I don't know.
They don't win
anymore.
They're
the Yankees.
When's the last time they won the World Series?
That's a good point. They haven't even been to the World Series, right? Since 2009?
Been a long time.
Okay. All right, I'll let you know how it goes. Also, for this all to happen anyway, it needs to get to a Game 5. So we would need the Royals to win one more game. So we'll see if that even happens. Also, that would be the night after we play Bethpage Black. So my mood will be very... Actually, my mood's going to be great. I don't care how I play. That's going to be the greatest course I've ever played.
Yeah. Yankees, World Series appearances, just double checking. I think it was the 2010s.
2009, right?
I think the 2010s were the first decade...
Where they didn't?
That didn't make it.
Okay.
Since like the 1910s.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of New York, so Joe's going. You're going to play Bethpage, maybe do a Yankee game.
And then Bills
and
Jets.
And Bills Jets.
Yeah. So I'll miss the Manning cast.
That's fine. I'll tell you what happens.
All right.
Bills Jets. Is it, I don't know. Everyone out there, judge yourself. Are we in panic mode? Or is this a panic mode watch? Right? We did the advisory, the advisories, watches, and warnings. Are we on panic mode watch? panic mode advisory.
Advisory, maybe.
I mean, people are still thinking they're going to be good and win games and probably go to the playoffs and probably win the division. This game will go a long way for that. But there's definitely uneasiness with what the offense and the passing game looks like. And, you know, the calls for whether it's a change at a coach, which I think are unlikely, but whatever, you can say what you want, or if it's a trade for a receiver, like we're 5 weeks in, and it's already, you've got to do something. You have to do something about this receiver group. You don't have the horses to complete a season like this. Now, is that panic, or is that just reasonable reaction to a couple of games? Because I think it's reasonable.
I think it's absolutely reasonable.
I don't hear panic yet. I hear measured evaluation.
Panic would be like thinking they're going to miss the playoffs, wouldn't it?
If right they now? Lose to the Jets, is that panic mode?
Well, and are we... Yes. Yes. If they lose to the Jets, it's panic mode. They shouldn't be losing to the Jets. I know the Jets' defense is still really good, but I've watching that team all year so far, I would be... It's bad to lose to them. That offense is not, it's not good. And the Bills defense should keep them, they should keep them within 20 points. And if you can't get to 20 points, we got problems. And the division is supposed to be, to me right now, the bare minimum because of how easy it's looked early on in the year. And if you can't take advantage of that, like, yeah, I might be in panic mode at that point. I think panic mode right now would be thinking their receivers are so bad it's going to potentially cause them to miss the playoffs. And I'm not there. I'm still thinking it would be really stunning if they found a way to miss the postseason.
803-0550. Larry in South Florida as we connect with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, good morning, fellas. How are you?
Good.
So, this one's a tough one. The Jets' defense and the way our offense is going and the way we're calling plays and the way our receivers are just god-awful. Last year, I called you before the opening game, and I said, if Josh Allen throws in the sidelines, we're going to have a long day because that's all we do is really throw in the sidelines. We have this wonderful tight end, pass-catching tight end, playmaking tight end, who should be going over the middle, but every time it's a damn out route, and it's to the sidelines. Their cornerbacks are just going to be sitting there waiting for it, and Josh has not had a pick all year. If they have this game plan going in, I'm not only predicting a pick, but I'm going to predict more than one, and I'm also going to predict a pick six. Sauce Gardner is just going to be sitting there waiting, and so is that other corner who's really good and really fast. So I think Joe Brady's got to dial up more motion. We didn't really see much motion last week and against Baltimore, the same idea. They just, I mean, using the word scared is the wrong word, but they played so darn conservative. And then we went back to just throwing the ball up aimlessly instead of having a real game plan to follow. I don't understand what happened. Houston was there, even though Josh was horrendous. Houston was there for the taking. And that was, once again, a coaching decision. So I don't know if you guys saw that little article by Adam Schein. Now, he's a huge Bills backer and a huge Bills supporter. He came out and said, like, I called you guys Monday. I was really heated. Sorry about that.
No, you're good. He said they'll never win with McDermott.
McDermott has to go. And it was about McDermott. They're never going to win a Super Bowl. McDermott, I don't just stop there. I don't think they'll ever see another championship game with McDermott. And he's got, in my opinion, you know, they let Sala go. Great. Why aren't we letting McDermott go? Because, in my opinion, they're 1A, 1B. McDermott was hired before Bean. I know McDermott had say for Bean to come in, so I don't think Bean's ever going to pull the trigger on McDermott due to loyalty. And since Bean's really not McDermott's boss, how much of this team is really Bean's? Like, I know we talked about that back-to-back, Russo and then the Boogie Basham pick. That is ridiculous. It should have been Russo and then a wide receiver, or Russo and then an offensive tackle, or Russo and a tight end. It should have been something to help Josh let him just flourish. And my other point is, Joe, I wasn't even going to bring it up, but you said something earlier in the program, and it just set me off. How can the Sabres stink so much yet again? I mean, come on.
Well, there's – go to Prague. To this, Larry, there's a potential point to be made. The Devils are probably really good.
The Devils are a great team.
the Devils are probably going to be very, yes. very good. So you played two games against a good team. You lost. All right, let's see how they respond.
It was a 112-point team 2 years ago that was probably only bad last year because their both goalies got hurt, both their top two centers got hurt, and their number one defenseman got hurt. You tell me a team that would survive that.
Right, so we'll see. The Sabres can make not quite a statement on Thursday against the Kings, but they've got the Kings and then the Panthers, and then three games against teams they finished ahead of last year. So I want to give it the next five games before I say, you know, they're in trouble already.
But it didn't look good.
No, that's right. It didn't look good. Thanks, Larry.
One thing he brought up that I have a tough time with is evaluating Bean. Because I hear that a lot, and it might be right of, is Bean just... One, on Larry's point, like, you don't think Bean would ever pull the trigger on McDermott. I don't think Bean has the authority to fire Sean McDermott. I think that is from Terry Pegula. That is from the ownership group.
Right, they each report to him.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
They can't fire each other, in my opinion.
There could be, and I only say this not about the Bills, but Robert Saleh got fired probably because of some sort of power struggle, who likes who.
Sure, right.
Like, Rodgers doesn't actually have the authority to fire Saleh. The GM does.
But he might have the influence, too.
Sure, yeah. And Nathaniel Hackett is whatever. Like, there, of course, could be a power struggle, which I don't think there will be
right.
with this team.
That's right. But that comment about how, well, Bean's just picking the guys McDermott wants. Maybe. Like, I don't know, because what I have struggled with Bean and, like, how much criticism to levy against him for the build of this roster is there are times where I feel like, yeah, like, this is a McDermott guy, this is a McDermott guy. And then when they pick their guys on offense, it's, well, Josh wanted Kincaid, and Josh wanted Keon Coleman. So I'm kind of left up in the air on Bean of, should I be looking at him, targeting him for player evaluation, or should I not be because he's just doing what the coach and the quarterback want?
It's a fair question. No matter what, McDermott gets... The buck stops here with McDermott. Everybody, not everybody, but a lot of Bills fans, if the offense is bad, it's because of McDermott's decisions to bolster the defense. If the defense is bad, it's McDermott's fault, whether that's Leslie Frazier or Bobby Babich. Like, it's McDermott gets, like, you just laid it out there. Who they draft comes down to McDermott wanted that guy.
Yeah.
Or I guess in this case, Josh Allen wanted that guy.
At least on a couple of them, right? Because we have comments about... Allen texting, right? Like, he wanted Kincaid or with Coleman, the same thing. And then, by the way, on the pick six thing, Allen currently is the third longest streak in NFL history of not throwing a pick six.
Predicting his first ever.
That would be is it his first ever? Just first? I think he had one in his, like, third game. The Packers, maybe?
Okay, I don't remember that one.
I'll look it up. Maybe I'm wrong. All I know is he's the third longest active streak in NFL history. Yeah, no, I'm looking at it now. Streak started on September 15th, 2019.
Okay.
So he has
one
somewhere.
Mike in Tonawanda is up next. Hey, Mike.
How you doing, guys? Quick thing before I was going to make my point, because I was just thinking about it a little while ago. Can Josh not hit seam routes? Because I was just watching a couple of clips of, like, Gronkowski and different things like that, and I know we got these two tight ends, and, like, other than the other day, he attempted one the other day that got tipped or whatever, but, like, thinking back, has he ever hit, like, a seam route? It seemed like he can't hit those throws. And secondly, what I was going to say, my original point why I called, I honestly feel like if we lose Monday night, even though we're just 3-3 and we're just in second place in the division, I feel like the season's done, to be honest with you guys. And I know it's not mathematically done, but I just feel like because they'll go on a little run, they'll beat the Titans and the Seahawks, whoever. You know, we've seen this song and dance before. But as far as, like, making some kind of, like, miracle run or whatever like that, I just feel like the fan base, you know, everything's going to be so deflated if we lose to that dumpster fire in New York. I don't care what the culture changes is, whatever like that. If they do not separate themselves Monday, I feel like mentally, I feel like the season's done, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, and again, like I said, they'll go on a run, they'll beat the Titans at home and whatever, but, like, the deflation everybody's going to feel that just being 3-3 from where we started and how they look the past couple weeks, and especially if they look bad on Monday night, it's a wrap. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I know what you mean. There's the season is over. It's not actually over. They can make the playoffs. You would say if they lose to the Jets, you'd have serious doubts about, like, what they could do. Like, when Miami lost to the Bills, the season was over. Like, sorry, you lost them. Tua was hurt. It's over. Maybe they can come back. Maybe Tua can get healthy again, and they can push for a playoff spot. But, like, you're done. Everybody knows what you are. I feel that way about the Jets, that their season's over. I do not believe that Rodgers is good enough to lead them to where they want to go. Here's Woody Johnson firing the coach, making a change. Okay, we'll see if they trade for Davante Adams. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is good enough anymore to win like that. But, you know, that could be wrong. We have our jokes that if you run on 2nd and 17, your season is over because you don't trust your pass. You don't trust your passer to get 8 yards and try and make it more third manageable. But, you know, if they were to lose to the Jets, it would mean that they're in a real dogfight for the division. They really are a win over the Jets from everybody kind of feeling comfortable and being back to evaluating them, not on the division, but on the conference. And they do have losses, again, to Baltimore and Houston.
Yeah,
they're going to play Kansas City. If they go 0-3 against those three teams, I know what someone will say. Sure, you're going to make the playoffs. What are you going to do? Go 3-0 against three teams that already beat you? Maybe. Back to the McDermott point that Larry was making. He said Adam Schein had a piece up that McDermott will never win. I'll just throw my hand up in the air and self-report on this. I don't know that I ever get to that with any coach that wins. Coach, I know he's got Josh Allen. If you show me a bad coach, I'll tell you you won't win with this guy because he's provably terrible at his job and doesn't win games. Like the Sabres have had a lot of coaches that don't win. But when you get to where McDermott has, I cannot comfortably say you will never win with him. That's not to say he's the best you could possibly do, but NFL history and sports history is littered with too many stories of guys that were told they cannot win, and then they win, and they win again, and they win a lot. And I can't overlook those. So Andy Reid was, he can't win. And now all he does is win. Well, he got Mahomes. I know. I get it. To tie it to one guy, he can never win. I just have a tough time with that. I'm not here to tell you you're wrong, but I don't know that you'll ever hear me say it because these mistakes, lots of coaches make horrific mistakes like this. And on the final drive, we're going to get to Joe Marino next. On the final drive, I am turning more toward Allen than I am McDermott. I think it's more, I think that the final drive in Houston is more on the quarterback than the coach. The coach put it in the best player's hands for three plays. And I know that you don't love your weapons, but you had options. You had plays. And he is turning down available options to throw down the field. I'm not thinking that the final three plays in Houston is on the level of offense with 13 seconds or, you know, the Philadelphia game. So to that point, Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, he'll join us next. He had an interesting take on that final three plays, including what went wrong on the first one, the throw to Keon Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
What really went wrong there? It's maybe not what you think went wrong on that play. So Joe Marino's on the way next. We'll chat with him. He did the All-22 breakdown. He always does an All-22 every week for every game. Would recommend big time listening to Joe on those, and we'll get that. So what happened on the first play of that final possession that we didn't necessarily see on the broadcast that shows a couple layers of their problems? We'll get to that coming up here on WGR. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Wednesday morning. Jeremy and Joe with you. getting ready for Monday Night Football. The Jets fire their coach. The Patriots change their quarterback. But on Wednesdays at 7:30, we talk with Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. I made a point, Joe, to get out on time so we could have as much time as we need to talk about this offense. That's the highest compliment you could get.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Good to be on with you. And hopefully we have some good ideas here to get this thing back on track.
Well, I listened to your All-22 breakdown of this game against Houston. I wanted to start with the final possession because you brought up something that I'd never not heard anybody else bring up before on the first play, which was the throw to Coleman, and maybe how that represents lots of things, that the passing offense, the struggles they're having, they're layered. There are a number of problems mixed in, and this play I thought was one that would indicate a lot.
Yeah, the first down play, that end-of-game sequence, was a back-shoulder throw to Keon Coleman, and is a bad play. The whole point of a back-shoulder throw is that your receiver pushes vertical, right? You want to sell a vertical route, and then you kind of snap it off at a certain point in the route, and you get that quick separation and look back, and the football's there for you. You watch that play, Keon Coleman, I would say 3 or 4 steps into the route, he's already looking back for the football. Like, respectfully, he looked like a 21-year-old rookie that was really excited to get the ball in that moment and forgot to do the technique and fundamentals necessary to win the route and make himself available. And so that's an issue, right? You want him to run a better route in that situation. But Josh Allen doesn't have to throw that ball. You know, that's a low-percentage play to begin with in terms of back shoulder down the field. And I think you can have disappointment in Keon Coleman and the way he ran that route, which was bad. And then also for Josh Allen to keep his eyes on it and not consider other options that were on the menu. And I certainly think that gets into a bigger conversation about that end-of-game sequence where it's been the topic of discussion, and certainly a lot of people think the Bills should have run the ball. The point is they needed to get a first down. They had to get a first down. And so what I think there's a pretty good answer to what's the best way to get a first down. It's asking Josh Allen to throw the football, but it's how he threw the football. It's a deep shot to Keon Coleman on first down. It's a deep shot to Mac Hollins on second down. Those are low efficiency plays. When you just needed 10 yards, you didn't need to try to do that. And so a lot of issues there at the end, but it's a lot bigger than just the way that Sean McDermott, quote unquote, chose to manage that situation.
You know, looking at the big picture, Joe, like if I want the optimist view, I might say, well, okay, in time, Coleman will get better at that, and Allen and Coleman will get some better chemistry. But right now, they're looking for answers. They're throwing low percentage throws. The thing I want to get to is, you know, you mentioned the menu of throws that are there for Allen. And this goes to what Joe Brady's calling and then what Josh Allen is choosing. As you look at the way this passing offense operates right now, what is the path forward through that?
Well, I think getting Khalil Shakir back matters a ton, right? He's the one receiver that has game experience with Josh Allen prior to the season. To me, he's the Bills' most important offensive weapon. And he's the guy that you trust that can run good routes and get open and catch the football and create after the catch and has a really big-time competitive spirit about him. I think step one is getting that guy back on the field. And so a game where, you know, the defensive structure is going to challenge your wide receivers, it's probably good to have your best one. I think that's an important thing for us to call out in this game. And so I think that's where you kind of start. And I think you got to get back to being more willing to do the smart, right thing with the football. And, you know, Josh Allen is throwing the ball down the field on deep shots right now at the second highest rate of any quarterback in the NFL, which is absolutely insane to me. He's 4 of 20 on throws that are 20 plus down the field. This is not a team that's built to win down the field, but for some reason they're doing it at the highest frequency of any, or second highest frequency of any team in the NFL. And so they got to get back to the things that made them successful in weeks 1 through 3. And I think there's a natural pushback to say, well, Joe, maybe the NFL studied those games and they kind of figured out, you know, how to take that stuff away. I don't know. I think that you kind of got into a situation where against Baltimore, the game kind of got away from you early. And so, you know, you're probably not being true to who you want to be offensively, but there felt like there was a level of arrogance in how they tried to play against Houston, where, you know, they give you that one high middle of the field close. You're supposed to throw the ball deep. You're supposed to throw the ball outside to the perimeter. You just don't have the talent right now on the perimeter to do that and be successful. And it was like, at what point were you going to acknowledge that that wasn't, while it was probably the right thing, if you go to the football book on what you're supposed to do to beat cover one, it is that. But also, you just didn't have the people to do it. And so I think you needed to consider some different ways to play offense, and they just never did, including in that high leverage moment where they only needed 10 yards.
Yeah. In football, Joe, you know, as a coach, like, there are things you want to do and there's things you can do. You know, you have the talent right to do this or that. And I guess that's the next question is, as we've seen two teams in a row, Baltimore and Houston, kind of do this to them, the phrase middle of the field closed, how defenses choose to play. Could you explain what that is? And then the follow-up is, if teams are going to decide to play that kind of game against the Bills, can they throw it into the middle anyway? Can they be effective even if defenses are trying to funnel the ball to the outside?
Yeah, so middle of the field closed coverage means, you know, pretty much you have two options in football. You have middle of the field open, two high safeties. Middle of the field closed, one high safety. And if it's middle of the field closed, one high safety, that means the smart thing to do is to throw the ball outside, right? That's where the space is going to be. And so structurally, that's how Houston plays defense. They're the fifth highest rate of one high middle of the field closed coverage. Now, they actually mix it up a little bit more against the Bills, but at their core, that's what they are. And so, yeah, you should throw the ball deep and outside the numbers. And it doesn't mean that you can't throw the ball over the middle, but where it becomes good to throw the ball over the middle is when you can get that quick separation. Who's your quick separation guy over the middle? Khalil Shakir wasn't available. Now, the other thing you can do is have outbreaking patterns, which, you know, the Bills tried to get some of that going. You can just see that the timing was really off. I'm thinking about there's a third down throw to Keon Coleman where they're trying to run that deep out, and Keon rounds the break, and Josh is high and wide in the ball, and you just kind of saw on those types of throws the lack of chemistry that Josh has with his targets right now. So just not a great matchup stylistically for the Bills based on the way that they're constructed. And, you know, I think that that's going to be the what they're going to get challenged with, you would think, moving forward until they can prove that they can beat that.
What about Kincaid for that, Joe? Like, I know it wouldn't be as quick as Shakir, but he's supposed to be living in that same part of the field. And he did get open on a – this is a different type of route. That seam route in the first half that Allen just underthrew him on, I thought that was going to be a touchdown even live.
Yeah.
But what about Kincaid for that? Because we know the numbers don't look great right now, but I feel like the way you're talking about, like, what is available to them, the things they need to get better at, that he should be some answer.
Yeah, I'd agree, Joe. And yeah, I think that seam shot was just underthrown, and you'd like to see it. And yeah, I think he should help you in the middle of the field. He should help you on some corner routes. They obviously, Kincaid had his own drop in that game, an underthrow on another target. That's a relationship that you'd expect to be a little better right now. And I have certainly acknowledged, at least earlier in the season, that there was a lot of gravity towards Kincaid, and teams are kind of focused in on him, but not always. And when the Bills have had opportunities for Josh to get the ball to Kincaid, it's not been as efficient as it needs to be. And so that's another layer to this offense that needs to get going for it to be what they, you know, have built it to be based on the opportunities they had.
Early in the week, what about all of this for how the Jets typically play defense and the way they've historically played the Bills? Like, what does that matchup look like given what we've seen the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think there's some good and bad with that. I mean, the Jets are a team that's going to take away vertical stuff and dare you to be patient, which could be a great thing if Josh is willing to embrace that style of play. You know, if he's willing to take the underneath stuff and not get bored with it and rely on yards after catch and rely on checkdowns, you know, I think it could actually be the right team at the right time. But if Josh Allen's not going to, and they're going to come out and try to, you know, get the offense going with some explosive plays down the field, I don't like the way that's scheduled out to be. And so I'm pulling the data right now here on the Jets. The Jets, so far this season, they run one high middle of the field closed at the ninth highest rate of any team in the NFL. So they're probably going to lean into that and have a good mix of, hey, let's see if you can be patient. And then when we give you the opportunities to go deep, can you hit it? And probably not. The answer to that's probably not. The Bills' vertical passing game has been deplorable this year. Like I said, 4 of 20 on throws 20 yards or more down the field. And so I think that's a good place. If you're a mixed team and you want to play blended coverages, I think that you're in good shape right now to feel good about what you can present to the Bills and dare them to beat you.
One thing about the Jets, too, Joe, is they're second in the NFL in how often they hurry a quarterback, and they're second from the bottom in blitz percentage. So this is a team that they get to the quarterback and they hurry him. What can the Bills do in that regard? Because I know a lot of what has happened with the Bills' breakdowns offensively, it's not necessarily just the offensive line. They've had issues with pickups and protection.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good thing because I have a good amount of confidence in the Bills' offensive line to be able to win one-on-one in pass pro. It's kind of when those sim pressures come and pressure looks come, that's where the Bills kind of get goofy with how they protect. And so I think a team that relies on organic pressure is probably ideal for the Bills. But at the same time, don't you feel like the Jets are going to think, well, this is a team that's been susceptible to sim pressure looks and blitz looks? You know, they're probably going to have some things that are unique to Buffalo. And so I think that almost makes it more difficult is because you're trying to anticipate how they're going to get after you, and you haven't really seen a menu of that to consider on tape. So there's going to be some unique pressure looks that the Bills are going to have to figure out their protection rules and get on the same page, because it's been ugly. The amount of times you're just seeing free runners, and it's like the slot, the free runner comes from a slot corner that's blitzing, and the slot receiver doesn't sit down, make himself available. The back goes out for a route. Nobody blocks the blitzer. And it's like, well, that's not going to work. There's got to be better communication. Guys got to get on the same page.
To the other side of the ball, a lot of good things to say about the defense. I mean, Cole Bishop had a rough game. You know, he's being asked to do a lot back there as a rookie. But I know you have a lot of good things to say about Dorian Williams, Christian Benford. The Bills' defense, Terrell Bernard returning. Like, I think expectations for the defense should be that it continues to improve as the season goes along. They've got a lot of good players, even with a number of good players injured.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Baltimore wasn't the banner day, but the reason they had a chance against Houston was big plays that the defense made, getting some big takeaways. And they had two bad drives, right? The 67-yard touchdown and then the other touchdown run. That was pretty much it, and it's early in the game. And a lot of that was your young players that we were relying on, but things stabilized. And I think that there's a lot of good happening on that side of the ball in terms of player development and overcoming a multitude of players being out. And you mentioned Christian Benford, who has just elevated his game to a really high level. I mean, whether you watch the tape, whether you subscribe to metrics, whatever you want to use to measure cornerback play, he's doing that at a high level. I think, what has he given up? I mean, just the numbers are just,
it's like 29 yards on the season.
Yeah. He gave up like one catch for 3 yards against the Texans. And, you know, you think about what Houston was able to do. It's more, hey, we're going to get our best players isolated up on Cam Lewis or linebackers or safeties. They don't want to throw against Benford. That's really coming very apparent quickly. And I mean, Dorian Williams, I feel like the development year over year has been just terrific there. You can feel it. You can see it. He's physical. He's fast. He's processing the run extremely well. He's not been the liability in coverage that he was last year as a rookie when he got some chances to play. And so, you know, that becomes an interesting conversation because you love the trajectory and where he's at. And I think with how injured Bernard and Milano have been, there's probably going to be snaps available for Williams, but feels like he can be a core piece of this defense moving forward. So, yeah, good things happening on the defensive side of the football. Hopefully the Bills can put a complete effort together here real soon and we can see, you know, or be reminded, I guess, of what this team's capable of.
How big a concern is safety? Was it more than just that one big mistake by Cole Bishop in the game? Like, how did the rest of it go?
No, I think he was rough for sure. There was, you know, obviously that one stands out, and I think what's disappointing is it was pretty routine. I mean, you're the deep middle safety on cover three. You have an in breaker. You got to stay leveraged over top. Why was he flat footed? Why was he buzzing down on anything? That was just poor communication. And I mean, you heard McDermott talk about it. They missed time together, but I don't know. That's a pretty basic rep. And my thing with Bishop was I always thought he was best as a low safety. When he can trigger and play downhill and tackle and be physical, it wasn't necessarily what he did from depth. And I thought that play, I mean, he hit the 11-yard catch to Nico Collins on the little quick pass where Bishop had him dead to rights for a tackle for loss. He tried to fill from depth. He was out of control, couldn't make the play. A couple of other issues with fitting the run as well. So, you know, I think Bishop, it's a big role. It's a lot. You know, it's a safety-centric defense. It has been for a while under McDermott. And, you know, I think you can tell that he's missed some time, and you can tell that he's not necessarily ready on all fronts. But I think that's the deal when you play these young players. You kind of have to let them fail forward a little bit. And so he'll be better in the long run. It's just how do you overcome it, you know, until then. Maybe wraps back, and I'm sure they'll probably be fine. Good experience, but obviously exposing, you know, the work ahead for him.
Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, we'll talk again next week. It'll either be panic mode or, you know, a nice comfortable lead. Righted. Yeah, you know, at least a divisional comfortable lead.
Yeah, week to week. Yeah. We know it. So let's hope for a good one next week, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Great work as always. Subscribe to the Locked On Bills podcast. Joe also does Locked On NFL Scouting podcast as well. Get those where you get your podcasts. Highest recommendation. The All 22 breakdown Joe does is great every single week. And of course, it's a daily show. All right, break time. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you're on hold, we'll get a call in when we get back. Bills Jets, panic mode warning, panic mode watch. Coach bump for the Jets after dismissing Robert Saleh. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. You can enter now. WGR550.com. Chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. TRS Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical Excellence. Powering tomorrow, comforting today.
Be caller 5 to win a pair of tickets. The Shoresy Fall Classic at KeyBank Center, November 13th, where the cast of the TV show Shoresy compete against the Buffalo Sabres alumni. Tickets courtesy of AEG Presents. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Caller 5 to 221-4WGR.
It's time for Worst Call Wednesday. We'll have the worst call on the field or the ice every Wednesday, but one of the worst calls you can also make is to skip your recommended cancer screenings. To learn more about potentially life-saving screening recommendations and guidelines, visit roswellpark.org/screening.
All right, so we pick a worst call.
Worst call. Yes.
Not a caller, although we might get some of those. But
yeah,
not,
maybe we could squeeze those in.
I don't have a caller that's a worst call of the week.
No.
My worst call of the week is the NHL not having any sort of indication that the season actually is beginning to separate from the preseason. Had there not been a hurricane game canceled, it would have gone from preseason game to regular season in one day. And the season opener being a 4:30 face-off in Seattle.
Right. Yeah.
Bad call.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'll go with Deshaun Watson still being the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns and them not benching him. Which I guess could just go on for how long? Because I think what probably is happening there is to bench Deshaun Watson, the coach has to convince the owner to pay him $200 million for the next 2 years to not play.
Mm-hmm.
And is the owner going to want to do that? I could very well see him not wanting to do that. Is he just going to say, you know, you're the rest of the year, you have exhaust all options to make this work before I have to eat nine figures for my backup quarterback?
It is going great. For everyone not named Cleveland, they made that move, and
yes,
the perfect thing that could happen would be it would be horrible for them.
Yes,
and it has been absolutely horrible for them.
It couldn't have gone worse.
Right, but better for us and everybody else.
Oh yeah, for sure. For a win for karma.
Yes,
1-0.
Not karma a big enough win, but still. All right, 803-0550. Rob, sorry, we're short on time. We had a good worst call Wednesday. Didn't want to get your call on because it's not a bad call. 803-0550. Do you think it's panic time if the Bills lose to the Jets? Are you already kind of there evaluating your panic warning, panic advisory? And Monday Night Football against the Jets, there are a couple things indicate they could be right back on track with a win against a team that lost to Denver. 803-0550, 1-888-550 to join us on WGR. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.